With the suicide of Nero, an era had ended. The Romans would not return to an older age, but would press forward into the violent roots of the Pax Romana. And in the space of just 18 months, four different men would claim the authority to rule the Roman Empire. Most of these men were out of touch, ineffective, and otherwise incapable of putting in place sustainable government. The first of these, a man we'll talk about today, was Galba. It seems like Galba assumed that he could return a more responsible, thoughtful, and principled style of governance, which would reverse recent trends in putting the soldiers and the Praetorian Guard in the center of the emperor making and breaking process. Why was Nero's successor, Galba, despite his conservative credentials, unable to establish control of the city of Rome and its empire? We'll talk about that on this episode of the Pax Romana podcast. Episode 22, The Year of the Four Emperors, Galba. The Pax Romana began with the reign of the Emperor Augustus. And with the death of Nero, it wasn't over. But certainly the illusion of peace and tranquility and an end to civil war was abruptly shattered when the fifth emperor in the Julio-Claudian dynasty was made an enemy of the state by the Roman Senate in 68 AD. And as we saw last time, Nero did not last long. His Praetorian Guard sided with the western governor Galba, and on June 9th, Nero committed suicide as Galba's army was still marching on Rome. And there are some similarities here with what we saw after the death of Julius Caesar. There was the hope among many in the nobility that the death of Nero, who they saw in many ways as a debauched tyrant, would lead to a period of liberation. Maybe not a renewal of the Republic, but at least a return to the Augustan age. Galba was their chosen champion. He'd been governor of one of the Spanish provinces, and his main ally, Otho, was also a Spanish governor. Galba came from a prominent Republican family, former consuls in his line. Like Augustus, his family claimed descent from a deity. In this case, it was Jupiter Optimus Maximus, that is Jupiter best and greatest, the chief god in the Roman pantheon. But also, Galba did not have one important connection. He was not related to any of the Julio-Claudians. This was going to be a fresh start. Galba, however, was 71 years old. He was praetor in AD 30 and consul in AD 33. That was way back during the reign of the emperor Tiberius. But as we'll see very shortly, the reign of Galba was not to last very long. And in fact, this year of the four emperors, which was really about 18 months, a little bit longer than a year, really shows that the Roman principate inaugurated by Augustus did not solve the main problem that it was supposed to fix. That is, it was supposed to end civil wars for control of both the city of Rome and the empire that was attached to it. But that was not the case at all. In fact, there is a great line by Tacitus. Tacitus says that the death of Nero, quote, excited all the legions and their generals, for now had been divulged that secret of the empire, that emperors could be made elsewhere than at Rome. That's Tacitus in his history. What is Tacitus saying? He's saying that the Roman emperors, despite their nominal adherence to civic religion and civic structures, the position of emperor was ultimately determined by who controlled the armies. And if you've listened to the podcast, you know this is really the case, because when Augustus became Rome's first emperor, he didn't do so simply because of some ceremony. That came after. What came before it was the victory at Actium and the civil war against Mark Antony. The Roman Empire was forged in the crucible of war and violence and coercion, and the Pax Romana, despite its lofty name, was really no different. And the year of the four emperors shows that in stark terms. So Galba became emperor. And one of the most immediate things that sticks out in his reign, which was so short that we don't have fantastic sources to describe it, is the coinage. One coin, for example, looks exactly like the coins minted by Brutus. So if you thought that I was making it up, that there's a similarity between the death of Caesar and the death of Nero, certainly Galba and the people that minted his money thought this was true as well. We have a coin that shows two daggers and the Peleus, which is the cap of liberty, awarded to a slave that had been granted his freedom. Brutus used this image to suggest that on the Ides of March, Rome was liberated by the assassination of Julius Caesar. Galba no doubt intended something similar, as if to say that by the death of Nero, Rome had also been liberated, or in this case, restored, because that is the word that appears on the coin. But after the death of Caesar, if you'll remember, there was a general amnesty and an attempt, at least for a few days, to forge some kind of peaceful arrangement with the various constituencies. After the death of Nero, the opposite occurred. Before Galba even made it into the city of Rome, he ordered the murder of thousands of Nero's supporters. The person Nero had appointed to be consul next year, murdered. The praetor, murdered. The governor of Germania Superior, murdered. The governor of Africa, Clodius Macer, who, by the way, had declared himself to be emperor, he was also assassinated. Now, that one we can understand because Macer had imperial ambitions and had engaged in several acts during the last year of Nero's reign that Galba did not want to see continue. So, for example, Macer had cut off the delivery of African grain to Rome, had minted coins in his own name, and had raised several legions worth of soldiers. So Macer obviously had to go. We're also told that Galba killed a woman named Locusta, and she is actually a person that has been in our story, but we haven't named her. In fact, she was behind the scenes. She was supposedly the woman that mixed the poisons that killed both the Emperor Claudius and his son, Britannicus. Galba did not want such a woman to potentially murder him, and so he had her killed as well. The sources that we do have about Galba describe him as a stern and discipline-oriented man with very high expectations of those around him. Maybe he was a man of principle, maybe he was just stubborn, it's hard to know. Certainly at times, he was foolish. For example, when Galba was still marching on Rome, Nero had raised an emergency legion to oppose him, composed mostly of sailors. And when Galba made it to Rome, this legion, of course, was not interested in really opposing him, but they did want official recognition, and that included some money. Galba refused to pay this legion, and so they rioted. And Galba then attacked them with his own cavalry, and then had this new legion decimated. We haven't talked about that practice yet. You no doubt have heard the word decimation. Decimation was a rare ceremony performed to punish a legion for some kind of egregious act of cowardice, treason. What would happen is essentially this. The army would be mustered, they would all draw lots, and the lots were designed so that 1 out of 10 of the soldiers would draw a short straw. Those that drew the short straw were then surrounded by the other 9 around them that drew the long straw, and they were clubbed or beaten or stoned to death. And so 1/10 of the army was murdered by other members of the army. It was a devastating and demoralizing punishment, but it was also meant to purge the memory of the evil act so that the legion could move on. And that's what Galba did to this Neronian legion. As you'll also remember, Nero had a reputation for spending lavish sums of money on unnecessary expenditures, from his golden palace to his performances to various gifts to friends. Supposedly, the finances were in a bad state when Galba took over, and so he did what was practical. He raised taxes and he cut spending on games and festivals. He also even demanded that many of the gifts and bailouts and benefits that Nero had passed out to people should be returned. And this was true even if the money had already been spent. This, of course, created a string of personal bankruptcies among many of Rome's elites. Now, either Galba thought that all of this was saving the Roman Empire, or at least the people around him viewed what he was doing positively. We have coins minted which show Galba's stern, grumpy, old man face, and on the reverse, a title that we have not really seen before, Savior of the Human Race. But in reality, Galba was not politically astute. The economic consequences of his tax increases and his spending cuts were jarring in the city of Rome. The fact that he wouldn't pay a legion and had it decimated was demoralizing for the military that had just only recently supported him. And then there was also the empire to fix. Nero had appointed a lot of different people in positions of power throughout the empire, governors and so on. And so what Galba does is he replaces many of Nero's appointees in Rome and in the western provinces, but in the eastern provinces, he does not do this. He also keeps the Praetorian Guard largely as it was. Now, why wouldn't he? This Praetorian Guard had declared for him and had committed treason against the previous emperor. But you can probably see the problem with this. The Praetorian prefect had already betrayed one emperor. What would stop him from betraying Galba? And Galba made that betrayal all the more likely because he refused to pay out a bonus to the Praetorians when he arrived in Rome. That was a problem for two reasons. As you'll remember, Claudius and Nero had both paid huge bonuses to the Praetorians at the very beginning, almost as their first acts when they took over as emperors. Galba refused to do this, and supposedly the Praetorians had been promised a cash payment, either by Galba or perhaps by senators, but regardless, they felt that they were owed, both based on precedent and based on promises, and they did not receive that payment. Galba was a conservative, older patrician. And while he couldn't remember the Republic, he did live during the ages of Augustus and Tiberius, back when the Roman Emperor was supposedly a guardian of the Republic. And so maybe he was just in denial of the realities that had occurred, that at this point, just five emperors in, the Principate had devolved into a military monarchy. And what mattered most was not pleasing the Senate or even abstract ideals such as they existed. But what led to sustainable government under the Pax Romana was keeping the soldiers happy and paid and therefore loyal. And Galba simply failed to recognize this new reality. The soldiers along the Rhine River, about four legions worth, had served their empire with distinction and most recently had quelled a revolt in that area. They expected a reward. But Galba didn't send them anything. And so, in January of AD 69, they decided to omit the emperor's name from their loyalty oath that they took in the new year. Within a few days, they had appointed their general, Vitellius, as emperor. As news of this rebellion began to spread, other legions began to make decisions. Four more legions, also in the Germanic provinces, then declared for Vitellius. Following this, governors in both Britain and parts of Gaul also joined Vitellius. Galba had been emperor for less than a year, and it was already clear that his regime was falling apart. Discipline and fiscal responsibility were not exactly popular, certainly not with the soldiers, and so Galba tried to find some way to suggest that his regime was going to last and was not the dumpster fire that it was looking like it was going to be. He named an heir to suggest a sense of continuity. And that's all well and good, but when a Roman emperor names an heir, there should be a celebration, and that celebration should include some cash payments to the population, or maybe the soldiers. This is what all of the previous Julio-Claudian emperors had done. But Galba was such a cheapskate that he didn't do that. He just made the declaration without the requisite festivities and benefactions. And so before the end of the month of January of AD 69, the Praetorian Guards turned on an emperor for the second time in just a few months. And they named Otho, one of Galba's supporters, as emperor. And Galba was rounded up and beheaded in the Roman Forum. The poor guy that had only just been recently named his successor obviously had to be murdered too. He probably would have been fine if Galba had not named him successor, but of course, because he was, and this was the purging of yet another regime, one that was only a few months old, the poor guy had to be beheaded as well. The very public and brutal execution of Galba must have been a wake-up call. This was not the Empire of Augustus. So the Republic was not going to come back, and the Augustan regime was not going to come back either. Rome was in new and uncertain waters. Was it going to descend into violence once again? Well, in the short term, the answer would be yes. After several ineffective, transitory reigns, a strong man would finally take over. A man who was on the opposite end of the Mediterranean, attempting to quell rebellions in Judea. But that man, Vespasian, would find that his brutal tactics used against the Jewish people would prove invaluable for fighting his own people for supremacy of the Roman Empire.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exacore. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.